Let's talk about the IU principle. This is extremely important. If a female comedian says, "When I was a cheerleader," she runs the risk that many of the women in her audience will look at her with resentment. They may be personalizing the remark, thinking such thoughts as, "My thighs were too fat to be a cheerleader," or, "I was never pretty enough, or popular enough, or athletic enough to be a cheerleader." In short, that opening doesn't build rapport with an audience. However, if the comedian says, "Have you ever had an experience so embarrassing that you wanted the ground to open up and swallow you?" Now, audience members begin nodding their heads. "Let me tell you about when I was a cheerleader," is the follow-up line. In this approach, the opening directs the audience to look at themselves. It's something they can instantly relate to. And rapport is established. That's the IU principle. Here's another example. If you're talking about financial planning, you could say, "I always pay myself first, not the recommended 10%, but I save 20% of my gross income." Well, what's going to happen? Audience members will probably start rolling their eyes or at the very least think to themselves, "20%? Yeah, right. Then the mortgage company slaps a foreclosure on me." Instead, you could say, "We're all hurting in this economy, and saving money is more difficult now than ever before. It's also more important than ever. So I say our goal is just saving money out of each paycheck. Sometimes it's 10%. Maybe it's only 1% at other times. Making a habit of saving is the point." This puts the audience in your speech. Instead of scoffing, they identify with what you're saying. So look at your stories and consider how you can turn them around to put the audience's perspective into them. For instance, I used to say, and this is Patricia Fripp speaking, "One morning I gave a speech for the IRS. After all, they get enough of my money, so I wanted some of theirs." Now, she says, "One morning I gave a speech for the IRS. They get enough of our money, don't they? So I wanted to get some of theirs." You'll be more effective at capturing and holding attention when you learn to draw your audience in. You don't want them to feel that your speech is something you're doing to them, but that you and your listeners are in this together. Let's talk about working with movement. The suggestion is that we don't say verbally anything we can say visually. The actor Chuck Norris said to his friend, the late Steve McQueen, "Say the last word in the scene and don't say anything you don't have to," close quote. Patricia Fripp says, "I'm an enthusiastic and high-energy person by nature. I use a lot of gestures in personal conversations, and this trait carries over into my presentations. When I began working with a coach, he pointed out that I had a lot of repetitious movements. While presenting my material, he asked that I not use any gesture more than once. This was very difficult for me in the beginning, but I kept working at it because I learned that positive impact of having variety in your movements." A story that Larry Wilde shared illustrates this point. At one of his comedy classes in Southern California, Larry asked his students to do their acts without using any gestures. Well, the first student began, but Larry stopped him. "Start again," he said, "but this time don't use your hands." Well, the student looked surprised. Even though the class joined Larry in telling the student that he was indeed using his hands, he wouldn't believe it. Finally, Larry asked him to do his act with his hands clasped behind his back. Well, that student was so handicapped without his hand gestures, he couldn't remember a word of his act. The point is that while we may use gestures to go along with specific points or words in our stories, if we're not aware of our gestures, we can use them too often or too broadly. And while we may lose track of our gestures, the audience doesn't. Too many movements, particularly those you do unconsciously, can distract from your presentation. "Don't use gestures without complete control of them," said Patricia Fripp's coach. This is excellent advice. And then she said a valuable tip, another tip she learned, was that her gestures, facial expressions, and dramatic style in general had to be toned down when her talk was being projected onto the big screen at the back of the room. Broad gestures and dramatic movements that look normal otherwise tend to lose sincerity simply by being viewed larger than life on a big screen. She said, "In a talk I prepared for NSA, that's the National Speakers Association, there's a part where I say, I love my life. And simultaneously, I put my hands up and tilt my head back. I knew my image would be projected on the big screen, she said, so I toned it down. Another facet of movement is how much of the stage we work. Patricia once asked a choreographer to watch a 3-hour seminar that she did and give her feedback. And he said, you did a wonderful job at working the front of the stage on both sides, but you didn't do much with the depth of the stage. Now, she says she's more aware of how she stands on the stage. And depending on the material she uses, she said, I may stand halfway in the middle of the stage, deliver an opening line such as, the future belongs to those. Then she pauses and takes 2 steps forward, then says, who created it? It adds drama to her words. A speaker's movements on the platform can greatly enhance the power of his or her words to create pictures in the minds of an audience. Let's talk about the power of the pause. You know, pausing in exactly the right moment in your speech is often more effective than anything you could do with your voice or your body movements. Professional speakers know their material so well that sometimes we have a tendency to talk too fast. You're probably listening going, yes, because it's one of the things that I do. But we have to remember that our audiences haven't heard what we're saying. It's important to give them the opportunity to catch every word. The faster we speak, the more we have to open up our material with pauses. If we don't, we limit an audience's ability to absorb our stories and ideas. It's amazing that most speakers think they get paid for sound, so they get very nervous if there's too much silence. Using pauses and silences to punctuate your material will draw in your audience every time. Eye contact, it has impact. But you'll find that if after making a point or delivering a punchline, you accentuate it by standing still, and just shifting your eyes, the impact is much greater. Pauses, silences are powerful. And now let's talk about varying the pace. It's another key element to delivery. Studies have indicated that the beginning 30 seconds and final 30 seconds of a presentation have the strongest impact on an audience. These are the times when you should maximize the use of your energy. I believe in coming out punching to grab my audience, said Patricia Fripp. But if you come out at absolutely your highest energy level, as you bring it down, your presentation is going to seem flatter to any audience. And if you stay at your highest energy level for the whole program, you know, that's not enjoyable for your audience either. And they're probably not going to believe in you because nobody's high energy all the time. Patricia Fripp says, as a high-energy speaker, I've had to learn to add more variety and pacing to my delivery. Many motivational speakers are wonderfully funny and have a high-energy delivery style, but if it's all the same level, no matter if it's high or low, it can come off as boring to the audience, especially with a long program. The secret of effectiveness is learning to use a variety of energy levels so your audiences will remain alert and interested in your material. While you're on the stage, you want to stand, move, but not pace. Be serious, be funny, talk loud, talk softly, and in other words, vary your pace and energy level to keep your audience interested. You know, Bob Murphy, an expert speaker, says, don't speak in black and white, speak in technicolor. Great advice. When professional speakers perform the same material time after time, it's sometimes difficult to make it look spontaneous and fresh. It takes high art and hard work. You have to know how to search for a word on stage or make your audience believe that the word has escaped you for a moment. Then, if there's a laugh or an emotional catch in your voice, you have to make your audience feel that. You don't have to speak from the heart every time you deliver the speech, but you have to create the perception that you're speaking from the heart. Humor, movement, dramatic delivery, using your voice for maximum impact, these are all techniques that can be learned. Good speakers study these techniques diligently until they've become not just a part of their speech, but a part of them. Yes, it takes time and work, but it's worth it. Patricia Patricia Fripp. She's a good friend of mine, and she's just a sweet, sweet, wonderful person in addition to being a master speaker. She says this, "Now I'm assured that when I arrive in potentially disastrous situations at any engagement, such as jet-lagged, stressed, sleepless, or coming down with the flu, I'll have techniques I can rely on, techniques that I can guarantee will help me deliver a top-notch performance. Your audience will forgive you almost anything except being boring." She says that's why I work to change my talks from all angles, humor, words, movements, pauses. To be predictable would be boring, and the only kind of predictable any of us want to be is predictably good. Close quote. Thank you, Patricia Fripp.